Welcome back here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR, More Than Money. We're talking about some of the complexity of bringing blended families together, right? Whether you've got minor children or perhaps grown children or different asset levels, right? All of these things create complexity when we're trying to, you know, to bring different families together at different times in their lives.
Nothing's more beautiful than having people fall in love and be together. The problem with when you are going through that experience is that you're bringing in, I call, baggage,
yep.
And it could be financial baggage,
yep.
into the relationship. And Marcus, has joined with us. Marcus Six is a founder and senior legal coach at Crossroads Law. Marcus, we were talking before the break about some key things that people need to be aware of when they're getting prepared for either a cohabitation agreement or a prenuptial agreement or a marriage contract. Number one thing, independent legal advice, bar none, the most important part. What other pieces of advice would you give for people who are going to be entering into relationships that need to be aware when it comes to these types of documents?
Sure. So get it done early. Start the planning early on in the relationship, or at least start the discussion. Because like any agreement, you need to have two people sign off on it. And I can tell you, I've had cases where you have people that have been together for 2.5 years, and then all of a sudden somebody thrusts an agreement in front of someone. And it's not pretty. Right? You get a lot of emotion that may come up. You know, I didn't expect this. What is this? What do you mean I have to sign this now? And that turmoil can create a lot of difficulty in terms of negotiating an agreement like this, right? So if you get it done early in terms of setting the expectations right at the outset and being very open and honest with your partner about what, you know, each of you would like to do in the event of separation, that really helps, because otherwise you may not get an agreement done. And then you're faced with the situation, which I've seen before, where people are coming up on that 3-year mark and they're going, you know, my partner won't sign this agreement. What do I do? Do I have to separate? Right? So that's another key point, is start the discussion really early in the relationship so that there's no surprises down the road.
Marcus,
another key aspect.
Sorry, Marcus. One of the key problems that I see with people getting together in relationships is full disclosure of what you actually own, transparency, right, of assets and so forth. This might be your next point. How does that process work? I think you need to put all your cards on the table and show everything so there's no misunderstandings or so forth. I'm just in that viewpoint. Marcus, what are your thoughts in regards to that? And then how do you prepare for that transparency conversation?
Well, you'd be a wise judge, because that's exactly what the Supreme Court of Canada says. All right, so this matter came before the Supreme Court of Canada before, and the Supreme Court said you need to have that full disclosure happening. If there's not full disclosure, that can create unfairness, because one person can say, I didn't know what I was signing. I really didn't have any idea that, for example, he was worth $20 million. You know, I thought maybe he was worth a couple million. If I knew he was worth $20 million, this agreement either wouldn't have been signed, or I would have negotiated more in the agreement itself. And so you do have to disclose your assets. Now, how far does that disclosure go, and what is the process? Really, again, this goes back to coming to an agreement that both parties are willing to sign. Most of the time in these agreements, what we do is we attach a schedule at the end of the agreement that outlines the assets and debts of both parties. All right. And we include the bank account information. We include all the businesses. We include all of that information so everybody sees it. And then we have a value as well. And then everybody knows what's on the table. You can go further than that, though. Sometimes in agreements, especially where there's a lot of assets or there may be businesses involved, one person may say, well, I don't really understand that, and I don't really see how that business could be valued at that amount. And in that case, we may bring in a valuator to take a look at the business. We may actually provide more documentation, physical documents to a person so that they can review everything before they sign it. I mean, bottom line, that's what needs to happen. You need to have an agreement that each person is willing to sign, and we know that you need to provide that disclosure.
And Marcus, just to take that a step further, because the point of contention I often see or hear is one or the other party, let's just pick a business, because that could be a significant asset that they have built prior to the relationship. To what extent does Alberta law permit you in that agreement to exempt certain assets, to say you have no claim against whatever it is, XYZ asset, even though you provided full disclosure and all of those things? Or does the law have a mechanism to do that?
Well, if you put it in an agreement, the law says that you can separate something out, all right? The court will enforce agreements on property where the parties are agreeing that this business may be totally exempt. That's fine. You can do that. But again, there needs to be full disclosure. There needs to be independent legal advice in order for you to do that. And of course, there can't be any oppression or pressure. There can't be any coercion. There can't be any abuse. If any of that is happening, then it can be unconscionable because that person may not be signing that under their own free will.
But you can. Okay, that's interesting to know. That's often a point of confusion for people.
One of the questions I've received from one of our clients is that their children, they're adults.
Yep.
They're going into a second relationship.
Right.
So their child is going to a second marriage. They're bringing in children into that new relationship from a previous marriage. And the concerns are on the future growth in the event and all on the assets. How do you figure out, not only from a relationship perspective,
right,
but from an estate planning perspective, how do you protect both? This is where the question comes into, Marcus, is that some people believe that the estate law is in sometimes opposite or in disagreement
conflict,
with family law.
Yeah.
And because in our understanding is that estate law is, if you have a married spouse, you're supposed to treat that person the same and in divorce or in matrimonial breakdown as in death. That's the understanding that we have. Kind of give us some insight on those types of blended family where it's either be one-sided, one person has minor children or both have minor children, they want to provide for them in the event of a breakdown. Can you put those types of things in a prenup? Or is it completely a different ballgame when it comes to estate law and family law being combined at the same time?
Well, certainly you can, with respect to prenuptial agreements, you can have, and I'll just focus on the children part because that is something that comes up a lot. So there are some pitfalls there because in these prenuptial agreements, you cannot put any provisions in there with respect to children except for maybe one. And so you can't say, child support is going to be set at X amount in the event of separation. You can't do that because child support is the right of the child. It's always reviewable. The court will not enforce an award or an agreement that limits child support. Okay, so the child always has a right to that child support. And two, the parenting, like sometimes you see agreements where people want to say, okay, in the event of separation, you know, we're going to restrict the access to the children. You can't even do that, even in a blended family, because, again, parenting is based on the best interest of the child, and the best interest can shift and change over time. And what may be in the best interest at the start of a relationship may be totally different 10 years or 15 years down the road. And so, you know, these agreements, they can't take those aspects and lock them in. Those aspects are always liquid. And if you're in a situation where you've got a blended family, you may have each person becoming a step parent. And as a step parent, that person may have some rights in terms of child support and may also have some rights in terms of access to the child. So that's something you need to watch out for. Now, that's the part where I said maybe there's one piece that you can actually include. And that is where you say, in the event of separation, neither one of us is going to be considered to be a step-parent, all right? And you put that in there in order to limit the liability around the child support, because if you're not a step-parent, there's no claim. But if you're a step-parent, you can actually be liable for child support in the event of a separation in a blended family. So that is a tricky issue. Quite often it's something that's reviewable, and quite often it's something that's not upheld in terms of that provision in these agreements, because the court is able to look past that and say, well, what really happened during this relationship? Did they indeed proceed in that way where neither person was going to be a step parent, or did that person provide discipline, guidance to the child? Did the child call that person mom or dad? You know, were they in fact acting as a step parent? And if so, it's likely they're going to be found to be a step parent. And if that's the case, then there could be a child support liability. But child support always should be claimed against the biological parent first before going to the step parent.
Okay, if there, that's a solid 20 minutes of there is complexity. And so, Marcus, thank you for that. And I think that it is apparent that if you're getting into a blended situation, that you should be upfront and honest about these conversations and engage them early, because you want to make sure that the family, everybody is protected in the event of a separation. The easiest time to do this is right up front when everybody's happy and you can have these conversations. So, Marcus, we want to thank you very much for your input. If anybody needs to reach out to you that sees this, has some complexity, has some concerns, how can they reach you?
Well, you can contact us at crossroadslaw.ca, and you can also contact us at coachmycase.ca for legal coaching.
Fantastic. And as always, you can reach out to Faisal or myself, and we can get you in touch with Marcus as need be. All right, so lots of people going into this. We got to plan for all of this complexity, plus what's going on politically, on taxes and everything, right? Everything's happening.
It's transition.
Absolutely,
it's transition. It's a transition of your life. You're going into retirement. All these issues are coming up. How do you profit and protect and make sure that you have the lifestyle that you want in retirement? We'll talk about that on Tuesday, September 21st, 7 p.m., live online. You need to register for this. So go to morethanmoneyradio.com.
Are you concerned that you might be a burden to your children as you get older? Stick around after the break. We're going to give you some tips on how to avoid that. You're on 770 CHQR in More Than Money.